Good afternoon, everyone. This is Sarah Fanta. I'm a research analyst at the National Quality Forum. I see that many of you are logged into the webinar as well as dialed into the call. So we're going to go ahead and get started. Before we begin, if any of you are having trouble seeing the slides, I know right away they appear pretty small. You can hit the maximize button up on the right-hand side of your screen. So that should help you to see a little bit more clearly. I'm also joined today by Sally Turbeville, who is the senior director on this project, as well as Ashley Wilbon, who is the project manager. Okay, and to give a little overview of what we're going to be discussing today, we're primarily going to be going over phase two of the project. As many of you know, phase one involves the development of a white paper document, which actually helped to inform the resource use evaluation criteria and the submission form. And we would really just like to thank a lot of you who are online who helped participate in that process. We feel that we took a lot of your input. It was very, very useful, and we're able to incorporate that into the final product. So we're really looking forward to working with all of you and just want to thank you so much for your time and effort that you put into this. So first of all, we're going to be going over some upcoming dates for the project, the scope of the call for measures, which is coming up, the measure review process, as well as how to submit resource use measures on our new online form, and how the technical advisory panels, or TAPs, and the steering committee will be evaluating resource use measures. Periodically throughout the presentation, we'll stop and ask for questions and answers. I know you guys are all muted right now, but we'll be sure to stop frequently so you can ask questions. Okay, so for phase two of the project, we have divided it up into two cycles. The first cycle will include cardiovascular measures, diabetes measures, and non-condition-specific measures. And that call is expected to begin January 31st and last until March 1st. Following that, we will begin the call for measures cycle two, which will begin March 2nd and last until March 31st, and that will focus on pulmonary measures, bone and joint measures, and cancer measures. Please note, even though cycle two starts officially on March 2nd, you're able to submit during the first cycle. So if you're ready to submit your measures, go right ahead and do so. But please note, cardiovascular and diabetes measures will only be evaluated in cycle one. So please be sure to submit during that time. But for cycle two, you know, whenever you're ready, you can go ahead and submit. The call for TAPs will actually also begin during that first cycle, January 31st to March 1st. And our resource use steering committee will actually be chairing those TAPs. But we're going to have an open call for cardiovascular, diabetes, pulmonary, bone, joint, and cancer. So people are going to go ahead and nominate themselves or be nominated. So that process will be taking place simultaneously. So the call for measures will include condition-specific measures such as episode resource use, per capita resource use, procedure-specific resource use, and per-admission measures. It will also include non-condition-specific measures. Those measures will actually bypass the TAP and be evaluated by the steering committee right away. So here's just a list of the 13 conditions which will be divided up by four TAPs. As you can see, we have a cardiovascular diabetes TAP, which will go first, a cancer TAP, pulmonary TAP, and bone joint TAP. And then the steering committee, as I said before, will go ahead and evaluate the non-condition-specific measures. And this is all very tentative. It's subject to change based on the HHS approval. But as of today, this is what we know. It is subject to change, but please keep in mind this is what we're leaning towards as of today. Please also note that we will not be accepting untested measures. Given the complexity of resource use measures, they need to be tested before they are submitted to NQF. We will also not be accepting paired measures, which is two or more measures that must be used together as bundle or pair. And also at this time, we will not be accepting composite resource use measures or readmission measures. The readmission measures will actually be under the safety project, so we didn't see the need to have people submit those twice since it's currently underway. And this slide just showcases the two measure cycles, when they'll begin and when everything will be reviewed. So as you can see, measure review cycle one will begin in May to December, and measure cycle two will begin in June and last until March 2012. So So at this time, are there any questions? Operator, if you'd like to open up the lines and see if anyone has any questions so far.
If you do have a question at this time, please press star 1 on your touchtone phone. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Once again, that is star 1 if you have a question. We'll go first to Barbara Rudolph.
Okay. Hi, Barbara.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good. Will you be sending out this slide presentation to those of us who attended?
Yes. This will actually be posted online. We can email it to you if you want. In addition, we are going to post another document that will actually be more like more informative of how to actually submit the measures and how the steering committee will evaluate the measures. So prior to measure developers submitting the measures, they will know how the steering committee will be evaluating them. We'll post another document.
And will this only be for new measures, or will this be for maintenance of measures in existence, like some of the length of stay measures?
Barbara, this is Sally. I'm not sure we understood the question. New resource use measures, or are you saying in general for the measures that NQF is going to be accepting across all projects this year?
Right. Is this only for the new measures that haven't been, you know, endorsed, or is it going to incorporate those measures that are up for maintenance as well?
Right. That's a good question. So we'll have to get back on it. There's a few resource use measures that are endorsed that could come under the umbrella of this project. We'll look into those and make sure we contact the measure developers and let them know what to do.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
We'll go next to Amita
Rastogi.
Okay.
Yes, hello. I have two questions. You know, we just recently got endorsed by NQF for the outcomes measures for our potentially avoidable complications, and we were planning to parallel that submission with the resource use for episode resource use, but we were thinking of submitting chronic conditions together. So would that be considered, like, non-condition specific? Because instead of doing cardiovascular, diabetes, COPD, asthma, like that separately, we were going to put the chronic conditions together as one bundle.
Mm-hmm. That's an excellent question. Given your description right now, it's sounding a little bit like a composite measure to me, which, because this is the first time doing resource use measures, we're not going to look at. But I think what we should do is talk to you through email, get a little bit more description so we can help you figure out, you know, whether to submit now and what it would be considered.
Right. And it won't be composite, but you're right. Like, we should have a more email or a more one-on-one discussion. So would I be reaching out to you, Sarah, or Sally, or?
Sure. Our contact information will be at the end of the slide. So there's three of us on the team, so whoever you want to email is just fine.
Okay, and then the other question is, like, say we submitted the pulmonary measures in cycle one, then would it be evaluated during the May to December cycle, or would it go into the next cycle? So if we submitted it early, like you had said that...
Right, yeah. Yeah, so for the clinical areas that are going to be evaluated in cycle two, if you submit them early, they'll still be evaluated in cycle two because the TAPs will start convening in that particular time frame. So there are individual TAPs for each of the clinical areas. However, we didn't want to prevent measure developers from going ahead and submitting early, but it doesn't speed it up.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Got it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for your question. Mm-hmm. We'll look forward to your email.
Yes, thank you.
We'll go next to Sherry Zielinski.
Hi, Sally. Hi, everybody.
Hi.
I have two questions as well. You said you were going to post how things are evaluated and how to submit the measures online. Is that going to be today, or can you let us know when that would be posted?
Yes, that will either be posted by the end of today or Friday. So
okay.
By the end of the week for sure.
Okay, great. Thank you. And then my other question has to do around, and I'm not sure if this is an answerable question, so minimum requirement for the browser. I know We have an older version here in our corporate offices, and I just didn't know if you knew by chance what the minimum requirements was for the form.
We can check with our IT department, and I'll get back to you. I can email you, Sherry. Right now, offhand, I'm not sure, but I'll definitely get back to you.
Much too techy. Thank you, though. I appreciate
it. Okay, sure. Thanks.
Might as well put down the instructions.
We'll go next to Jennifer Pierce.
Hi, Jennifer. Hi, you just actually answered my question. Sherry just asked it. Thank you.
Okay, sure. Thanks.
And there are no other questions at this time.
Okay, great. So we're just going to move on to Ashley Wilbon, who will be talking about submitting and evaluating resource use measures.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm going to move on to, as Sarah mentioned, the submitting and evaluation process in a little bit more detail so that you guys have an idea of how we're going to be approaching this for this project. So we, as Sarah mentioned, the online submission tool is going to open on Monday, January 31st, and reiteration of what Sarah said, but basically we'll be accepting the cardiovascular, stroke, diabetes, and non-condition specific measures. Those measures must be submitted during cycle one. All of the other measures can be submitted anytime during that 60-day period. But as Sally mentioned, it doesn't speed up the process, but it will give you more time to follow up with us if there, you know, that we have questions, that we can get the information from you, and enough time that they can be kind of closed out and start processing in order to pass on to the steering committee and the TAP. So we're trying to, as I think NQF as an organization, is trying to, you know, set things up in such a way that developers have more time to be able to actually enter the information. So that's kind of our goal with the elongated call for measures period. And also, as Sarah mentioned, we're going to be posting some instructions online to help and assist submitters with the process. There'll be a section devoted towards actually, you know, setting up an account, how to log in, how to access the measures. And then we've added a section on the end that will actually talk a little more specifically about some of the submission items and providing some examples on what we would actually be looking for some of those items. So look forward to that. As Sarah mentioned, we'll have that posted by the end of the week. So a little bit more about the actual online tool. When you're entering information, we're asking that you complete each field or each text box. There are very few fields that are optional, if any. So even if the answer is none or does not apply, there should be something in each field of the submission form. Most text boxes will allow for about 20,000 characters, which is about 80 pages of 12-point double space font, which is a lot. So the expectation is that you would submit as much as you can in each field, and that only supplemental information or things that don't fit into the submission form field would be provided in an attachment. Keep in mind that the steering committee members who are going to be evaluating this, you know, it's a lot of information. We understand these are very complex measures, but in your best effort to try to summarize the information in a way that, you know, can be captured in that amount of space or less, preferably, so that they can understand and be able to evaluate the measures sufficiently. As far as attachments go, the limit for each attachment will be about 5 megabytes, which is actually pretty big, but we are asking that, again, these are only used for supplemental information required to fully evaluate the measure. So because of the format of the tool, technologically and the way it's set up, it doesn't really translate tables and charts very well. So if you have tables or charts or supplemental information that you'd like to provide for the items that we've designated for attachments, we would ask that you send those or attach those as, you know, include those in the submission as attachments. But all other things that are text, we would ask that you include those in the actual form. And any attachments that you do choose to include, we would ask that you summarize or at least refer to the attachment in the corresponding field in the form so that, as you know, a committee member is reviewing it, they can know whether or not they need to refer to an attachment to help them, you know, finish or fully understand the information for that particular section. So just kind of connecting the dots there and trying to maintain and keep some order with the amount of attachments that we've allowed for this process. Next slide. So the attachments that we've allowed for this submission process a little bit more than the quality form, but we recognize that the information is a little more complex. So there's about 11 attachments that we've allowed throughout the form. The first is for general methods, and this would be an attachment perhaps that you might want to explain a little bit more about the general approach that your organization uses to develop resource use measures. The data dictionary and the code table attachments are standard for our submission forms. They are included also for the quality form. The data protocol is an attachment that would be used to supplement your specifications for the data protocol of the measure, so data prep, and Sally's going to go into a little bit more about what we'd be looking for in that section. The data source instrument is also a standard attachment that we allow if there is a specific database or instrument that you use to collect the data that is used to somehow compute the measure that you're submitting. That would be an attachment that you could use as well. Clinical logic and construction logic are specific to resource use. Those also will supplement the specifications that you provide for those sections. The resource use service categories is also specific to resource use, and it will allow you to provide any additional information on any of the resource use units that you've selected for that measure and defining it, providing codes, et cetera. The risk adjustment methods is one that I believe is also a standing attachment that we have across the board, and just allows you to submit additional information, particularly tables and graphs and charts for the risk model if you have them. A sample score report is an attachment that we've included for those of you who have multiple types of scores that are computed throughout or within the measure to provide an example of how the measure would be reported. And what it would look like. So we are accepting those as well. And then the final attachment that we've allowed for is a measure testing attachment. So this would be supplemental to your information provided in the submission form about your reliability and validity testing. So if there's anything that does not fit in the form or, again, requires a table or a chart to better or fully explain the testing that you've done, we would ask that you provide it in that attachment as well. Next slide. So the actual tool, there's 7 tabs on the submission form, and those of you that have submitted through the quality measure online submission tool, it's not different at all, actually. The contents of the tabs will be a little bit different, but for the most part, you still have the 7 tabs to go through. You'll start with the NQF conditions for consideration, and you can't move forward to any of the other tabs until you've completed that first tab and accepted or completed the questions on there so that the system understands that you've met the conditions to continue on. There'll be a specifications tab, importance, scientific acceptability, usability, and feasibility, and then the final tab is for contact information for the steward and so forth. So the NQF conditions for consideration, these are the 6 items on that first tab that I just spoke about. These must be met prior to committee evaluation. This process is somewhat of a two-step process. There's the process that you enter the information on the form, and then there's the process that once it's in-house, NQF staff will actually review what you've submitted and ensure that it has actually been met. So there may be some back and forth between staff and the measure developer if we feel that something has been inadequately completed, or there's a missing link there that we need you to follow up on. And until we have that resolved, we would not be able to pass the measure on to the committee or to the TAP to begin evaluation. So that's going to be an important step, but we just wanted to call that out to your attention. Next slide. So in terms of evaluating the submission items, the criteria that we developed for resource use uses the same 4 overall criteria that the quality measure criteria uses. We did make some slight modifications to the sub-criteria so that it further, lends itself to the specific attributes of resource use measures. But wanted to point out again that there's 4 overall criteria, each with sub-criteria, and some of the updates that have been made to the evaluation criteria for quality and subsequently to the resource use, a measure evaluation criteria, is that the scientific acceptability and the importance criteria will be evaluated by the steering committee using a yes-no. So, as you know, the importance criteria is a must-pass criteria. In order for the committee to even consider the remaining three criteria and to eventually end up recommending or not recommending the measure. The usability and feasibility criteria will be evaluated on a scale of high, moderate, low, and insufficient by the steering committee. And those have also changed. I believe we used to use a completely met, or is it CP partially met, moderately met. It was a little bit, wider scale of for the committees to evaluate how well the developer had demonstrated that particular criteria. But since the changes that we've made to the criteria, towards the end of last year, those changes will be reflected in this criteria as well. Each of the sub-criteria will also be evaluated on a scale of high, moderate, low, and insufficient by the technical advisory panels, and those scores will be passed on to the committee to make their final evaluations and recommendations. Next slide. So I'm just going to – actually, let me pause there before we move into the actual specific submission item. Operator, can we open it up for questions?
Thank you. If you do have a question at this time, please press star 1 on your touch-tone phone. We'll go first to Barbara Rudolph.
Hi. I have a question about harmonization. Measures that would you say that the only measures you need to harmonize to are existing endorsed measures, or because there might be new measures coming in which we won't know about that might be similar?
Right. Based on the harmonization reports that was completed towards the end of the year, which I'm sure you're familiar with, Barb, Karen, in the report, there was a table that set up for each stage of the measure development process at which points you're able to actually harmonize. And because these measures have already basically been developed and tested at this point, there's going to be very little opportunity to harmonize at the time these measures have been submitted. And so basically what we're looking for the submission of these measures, and we'll get into it a little bit more towards the end of this presentation for the usability section, is that, we'd just be looking for an acknowledgement that, you know, there are other measures out there that are similar, and this is why ours is different. So
okay.
More so of an explanation and acknowledgement that it's different, and this is why ours is different. Not really so much looking for the developer to actually harmonize at the point that they have submitted the measure.
Mm-hmm.
Does that help?
Yeah.
Okay. Allie, do you have anything to add to that?
No, that's right. We realize that there's only a handful, if that, of resource use measures currently endorsed. And because the CDP is starting next week, we realize that there's not really a lot of opportunity to harmonize at this point. But in the future, we'll continue to adhere to that continuum.
Okay.
Any other questions?
And as a reminder, that is star 1 if you do have a question. And no other questions at this time.
Okay, thank you. I'll go ahead and move on. So the next thing we're going to do is what we've done is we've pulled out some of the submission items from the submission form that we felt could use a little bit more explanation and maybe discussion about what we'd be looking for those items. So the list that we're going to go through for the remainder of the presentation is not at all exhaustive. It doesn't include every item on the list, but if you have specific questions for those of you that received an earlier draft of our submission form about specific items, we're happy to answer those questions. But what we've done here is, in the interest of time and to allow some discussion and questions, just pulled out the items that were kind of, more important or high level. So you'll notice that we focused on importance and scientific acceptability, and we've pulled in a few items from usability as well. So just to give you a little overview of how we've approached this. So I'm going to start with importance. There are four submission items for the importance criteria. We'll be looking for an indication of the cross-cutting areas that the measure has been specified and tested for use in, a demonstrated high impact of healthcare, a summary of evidence of that high impact, and citations for evidence of high impact. And on the right side of the slide, what we've tried to do is to put in a little bit more layman's terms exactly what we would be looking for you to submit. So for the cross-cutting areas, you're actually provided a list, so you would actually be able to select from that list the relevant areas that the measure fits into. For IM 1.1, we'd be also a selection list, but you'd be able to select an item that best describes this measure's importance. For item IM 1.2, we'd be looking for you to summarize some of the evidence or information from peer-reviewed literature or other established resources that support the measure's focus as high impact as you have indicated in the previous question. And then the following item is just asking for the citations that you've used for that previous item as well. So this criteria is really looking at how has the measure, based on the way you have presented and focused the measure and specified the measure, why is it important to measure it in that way? So the next item under importance is for opportunity for improvement. And we'd be looking for you to explain the benefits envisioned by the measure, a summary of the data that demonstrates variation across the providers or entities, citations, a summary of data on the disparities by population, and then citations for that as well. So for item IM 2.1, we'd be looking for you to describe how using this measure might impact the quality of care or use of resources based on its intended use. So based on what you've indicated for, you know, how this measure should be used, what benefits would you envision by someone implementing this measure in their particular environment? For the next item, we'd be looking for you to demonstrate the resource use or cost problems and opportunity for improvement using data demonstrating variation in the delivery across care or across providers or population groups. And then following that, the citations that would supplement that. And the next item looks at summarizing any relevant literature that examined variation in resource use by population or group that demonstrates disparities in care. So IM 2.2 is looking at variation across providers or entities, and item 2.4 is also looking at a variation, but more so in a perspective of disparities by population. So hopefully that helps to add some distinction between those two items. Next slide. And the final item for importance is the measure intent. And here we're looking for you to talk about or describe why the measure has been constructed to measure resource use in this way, and what and how it's intended to be used for. So in what environment, what would an end user be using this measure to determine or measure or count resources in this way? And also any relevant citations to support or information you have to support the selection of resources that you have made that will be counted in this particular measure. Next slide. And at this point, I'm going to hand it over to Sally to finish up talking about the scientific acceptability and the usability items that we've pulled out. Sally?
Thanks, Ashley. Do we want to pause here and see if there are any questions about importance?
Sure.
Once again, that is star one. If you do have a question, we'll go to Paul Barnett.
Actually, my question was on the last section. I heard an acronym I wasn't familiar with, the CDP.
Oh, yes, that's the consensus development process, which is...
Yes, okay.
Yeah, which is the process that we use here. Sorry about that. We get a little bit acronym heavy in this industry.
And there are no other questions.
Okay, thank you. So we're going to dive right into what we're going to be asking for the scientific acceptability portion of the submission form. As you know, if you had a chance to look at the white paper that's currently posted, the draft comment paper is still posted, as well as the criteria that came out of that. We did think about the measures in five different modules. We are going to be asking for information on any data protocol steps, the measure clinical logic. So if it's a measure that relies on some clinical information, for example, a measure looking at resource use for diabetes, we're going to want all the specifications that would allow the user to construct that particular clinical area. Then the construction logic, which really focuses on how does the measure get started, stop, are there any other pieces of information necessary for the user to understand if two similar measures overlap for a patient, all those kinds of steps that might be taken in order to complete the construction of the measure. And then we have a section for adjustments for comparability, which includes risk adjustments, any stratification. And this could be not just stratification of populations, but, for example, let's say you have a large episode-based resource use measure for diabetes, but that you recommend the user stratify them by type 1, type 2, something of that nature in order to be able to take more action on the measure, that would be where you would want to submit those specifications as well. And then a costing method. A resource use measure could just be straight utilization, or it could also employ some kind of assigning a true price or some kind of standard pricing method. And then reporting guidelines, which includes the steps that the user will need to take to assign the various results, which peer groups are they looking at? Is it a particular type of physician, for example, cardiologist, or is it a particular type of entity, et cetera? And we'll get into more detail as we move forward. One thing to point out, you'll notice that the first and the fifth modules both have in parentheses guidelines or specifications. We realize that sometimes for these particular components of a measure, users require a lot of flexibility. Different users have different types of data. They are can access different data, or their data completeness may vary a little bit. So they often require some flexibility, and we understand that many of the measure developers work closely and think about these need for flexibility when they develop the measures, and hence may provide to users guidelines, very clear directive guidelines on what they might want to do in order to get their data ready, or how they might want to think about reporting the measures. So we are allowing for those two modules, measure developers, to submit guidelines, which would allow for flexibility, or specifications, which, as you all know, do not allow for flexibility. It's the way that it must be done in order for the user to state that they have used an endorsed measure. The three other modules must be specifications. There is no option to provide guidance on how a user might approach that. So diving into what the submission items will be in the scientific acceptability, we're going to start with reliability testing. And this is exactly as it is collected for the quality measures, but we're using the resource use measures. And we request that the measure developer describe the data and the sample that was used for testing. We also want them to tell us, tell the steering committee, tell the experts, which analytic method they used, including the test statistic, and why that analytic approach was selected for this measure. That really helps set it up so that the experts then can better interpret the results. So please take the time to set up what testing approach you're using. And then we want to see the results, and they should be displayed in a manner that's easy to understand, readily available in a table, for example, or something of that nature, and it should be tied back to which analytic method you use, clearly. And then we are requesting a finding statement. So based on the testing that you conducted, is the measure reliable? And then, of course, include any limitations that have been identified. You'll see for the validity testing, same types of questions. We need you to tell us which data and sample you used to test the measure's validity. If it's just face validity, you should describe that in detail so that if it the experts can understand the systematic approach of that faith validity. We do not just want a statement saying faith validity. It must be described so that the experts can fully appreciate the approach used. We'll want the results of the validity testing, and again, we do expect the measure developers to summarize the results of the validity testing and tell us what the findings are. There is a section, and this is similar to quality measures, where we request the measure developers speak to the exclusions for the measures. Exclusions do not include, for example, if we're looking at a diabetes episode of care, it doesn't include reasons that you excluded people who don't have diabetes. So it's once you've constructed the measure, you may have some exclusions that you're applying, for example, someone who has diabetes and had an organ transplant, and they're just a very different type of patient, and you don't want to bias the results based on one patient being extremely expensive because of the needs and the care that they require. So what we want to understand is, why are these exclusions being used? How did you test them? How did you decide that these were the exclusions that are appropriate? Describe the analytic method that you used, et cetera. Very similar to the reliability and validity testing descriptions that we request. And we also want, again, for you to tell us how the exclusions affect the measures, were any biases detected, if some biases were, you know, if you think that that is okay, you'll have to provide the rationale, and then any limitations. In submission item 4 in this section for scientific acceptability, we also ask you to select, they are buttons, the populations for which you tested the measure. So Medicare population, commercial population, et cetera. Just as a reminder, the way the endorsement process works, measures are endorsed by NQF only in the populations for which they are tested. So we decided to just upfront have the measure developers be able to signal to us clearly and quickly which populations they had the opportunity to test the measure. I'm just going to go ahead and move through usability and feasibility, and then we'll open it up to questions. And the questions at that time can both be specific to what we just discussed or overall the entire presentation. So similar to the quality measures, we also request information on the usability of the measures. We want to know if you've had the opportunity and what your findings were in users being able to understand the measures. If this type of testing has not been done, there is an opportunity for say this testing has not been done yet. This is really the opportunity for the experts, the TAPs, and the steering committees to understand how easily interpretable and hence actionable the results of the resource use measures are. So at what point are you reporting them out, and are you reporting them out in a metric in which the users are able to take action and do something about it and hence improve. This goes back to one of the earlier questions about harmonization. We do still expect measure developers to look at the endorsed measures. Is there a similar resource use measure that is currently endorsed? We know it's a limited number. And if so, you'll want to talk about why your measure is different or the importance of your measure continuing to move forward. This is something that we do on the quality side as well. And then as measures come in, we realize that at that time, a lot of new measures will identify tested measures from different vendors that may be similar. And we will work with measure developers and our experts to determine what, if any, steps can be taken. But we realize this is the first resource use CDP process, so we will learn along the way and certainly be working very actively with the measure developers and the experts, realizing that you can't necessarily make substantial changes to a measure after it's been tested, et cetera. So we realize this is at a different point in the process. Okay. So that's it for those sections. I think we would like to open it up to general questions or any questions at all at this time.
And again, that is star one if you would like to pose a question at this time. We'll go to Sarah Tonnen.
Yes, hello everybody. I have a high level question about the scientific elements. So you've listed data protocol, measure, clinic logic measure, construction, adjustments for comparability and reporting. And I'm wondering if, or I'm asking that maybe there should be priority to that. So for example, the content should actually be more important than the data protocol. So what I'm thinking is that, for example, in the measure clinic logic, you name that there must be, how are they treating comorbids, how are they treating severity level. And so if severity level adjustment is not present, then would you not move this resource use forward? The clinical logic is actually very important, especially in stroke, for example, because a lot of the data today does not capture severity of stroke. And so if that's missing from the methodology or being able to capture, would you deny that the stroke set altogether on resource use because the clinical logic isn't there? So that's one major question or maybe a thought process that you've tackled with that we'd like to hear about. Secondly, in the scientific properties, so I would think clinical logic or the content component would be important, and then use, and then the infrastructure component, so like data protocol, construction logic, all that stuff supports infrastructure, but you know, the use of the information once it passes clinical logic, I think would be the next evaluation step. And then I have two other questions, but maybe if you would like to respond to the clinical logic and severity adjustment issue, that would be helpful.
Yes, and thank you for your question. The answer is that it depends. So in your example with stroke, you know, and you're saying severity level is extremely important, et cetera, you know, that would be something that our technical advisory panel and our steering committee would weigh heavily on. So if a measure was presented to them that they felt did not have a robust enough clinical logic, let's say it's an area that really must require severity level in order to truly capture resource use in a manner that's fair and makes sense, that would certainly be something that the experts would bring up, and it would certainly weigh into whether or not this measure would move forward for their recommendation and endorsement. So those kinds of components, while it seems like we're brushing over them quickly, we really do work with the experts, and so the TAPS will be composed of both clinical experts in that area as well as some methods people so that they can have very detailed conversations about whether or not for measures that are based on a clinical area that clinical logic is sufficient.
Allie,
so absolutely, we will be looking at that.
Add well. One thing about the clinical severity level. There is a specific question on the submission form that we ask for the submitter to detail the method they've used to assign the severity level. And below that, if you do not provide specifications for that, you have an option to select that, but you also must provide a rationale for why you don't. And so that rationale is going to be really important to the committee to understand, okay, even though you don't have a severity level methodology, is the rationale sufficient such that it's acceptable that they don't? So that also feeds into the technical experts' consideration of that particular component.
Thank you. That actually speaks to the importance of the technical advisory groups and if they're listened to or not. I know some of the CMS stuff that we've been working towards for 30-day readmission and 30-day mortality, it got to such a high level that it wasn't listened to about the severity of adjustment. The importance of severity adjustment. So it's just been a constant struggle and stroke that so that's kind of our fear that this stuff needs to be severity adjusted. So can I ask other questions or do you want to wait and come back to me?
Go ahead.
Okay, so with resource use, my understanding is that then it starts to be episode bundling and applying an episode methodology. And it hasn't been studied greatly, even though a lot of that has been put into place, like episode treatment groups, episode care models. I'm wondering how you address attribution in that methodology, joint, collaborative. So maybe if it's missing, or actually do you have it included in terms of how that works in your methodology and supporting the measure set and does the measure developer address that? So that's my second question.
Okay. Also a very good question. That goes under the reporting module, which, if you recall, all of you, is an area where we're going to allow guidelines or specifications. However, the steering committee, as we developed these criteria and what we needed to have the measure developers submit, did make it very clear that they want to see guidelines that, you know, have some sound reason and approaches if there are no specifications. So an attribution being one of those areas. They don't want the measure developers to stay mute on it. They want them to be providing, again, either the specifications on how to attribute the measures, the episodes in this example that you used, which episodes get attributed, how are they divided among physicians, which physicians are they applicable to, or are they not physician-only measures, are they entity-based measures, et cetera. So they do have an expectation that the measure developers will be providing either specifications or guidance to the users on how to handle that last and very important part of assigning resource use results. I will say, at any point in these submission items, if a measure developer does not have a particular component of that specification, generally they have an opportunity to say it's not applicable to my measure, and as Ashley pointed out, they must provide rationale why not. And then it's up to us to present that information to the steering committee and the technical advisory panels, who will weigh in on that and make some decisions about whether or not the rationales or the guidelines or the specifications meet what they require to recommend the measure.
Thank you. That's a very good response, and I'm glad it's in there. Just one quick thing. The language with guidelines, since measures come a lot from guideline evidence synthesis, I think it'd be best to try to avoid the term what are the guidelines, or if you could use guidance or some other list of, you know, elements or something, but guidelines is kind of a term that's reserved for clinical practice guidelines, but I may be wrong.
We're open to changing that type of language. I don't know what we can do in the submission form, but we'll think about it. If you have any recommendations in addition to guidance, feel free to email us.
Okay, wonderful. My third question and last one. Thank you for giving us the time. So you're doing resource use measures, and then there's quality measures. And as a measure developer, we're much more ahead on the quality measure side. However, resource use is important. But what I'm wondering in terms of the vision, how are these going to be integrated? So if you have stroke resource measures and you have stroke quality measures, what's happening with how they're used in the end?
Mm-hmm. Excellent question. Our vision is, ideally, we want resource use measures to be paired, linked, whatever verb we want to use there, to quality measures, so that we're making sure to be thinking about continuing to improve quality in our healthcare system, and either containing or maintaining or reducing resource use as is appropriate for making sure we're delivering high quality care. What we realize is where we are now, that we really needed to start endorsing resource use measures, but keeping our eye on the bigger prize, that eventually we want to start thinking about them together. And maybe at some point we will be doing really what would be an efficiency call for measures, where the measures are actually somehow integrated together. So that's the vision. What we think we're going to do in the meantime is, as we collect these resource use measures, look at the quality measures and start mapping them into different parts of the clinical episode. And so while they're not necessarily linked, we can at least start identifying gaps or areas where, for example, let's say it's a stroke condition area. Oh, we see a lot of quality measures that look at post-hospital, but most of our resource use measures are in-hospital. We need to increase some quality measures here and, you know, get some resource use measures out there. So I think we're just going to continue to build and signal to the industry as much as we can, so that we can finally get to that point where truly we're looking at quality and resource use simultaneously.
Yeah, so just so that message is carried throughout, you know, the measure developers on the physician hospital side, not just industry, but those preparing some of this clinical component need to understand and actually how they're linked as well. So that's just a comment.
Yep.
And one other thing is, how many are you people are you expecting to submit, or how many measures in these areas, CV, stroke, diabetes, non-condition measures, and who might those stewards be?
I believe at this point, clearly we've reached out to measure developers. There may be developers out there who are ready to submit that we're not aware of. But right now it's looking about 40 to 50 measures, so a good number for one project. In all the clinical areas that we've identified vendors that have measures, resource use measures that have been tested. Again, we're hoping that they submit. We continue to encourage them to submit. Right now, it looks like quite a few that are ready are from NCQA to Ingenix to ABMS. Quite a few of them have at least expressed what we see as sincere interest and an ability to hopefully start submitting in January.
Okay.
And we're really quite excited by the interest and the participation that we've gotten from vendors so far, from the measure developers.
Okay, so the vendor piece is critical, but it's just, the clinical representation on these groups, because they NCQA is managed care, and Genix is industry business infrastructure, and ABMS is Board of Medical Specialty, but
right.
The real content around this stuff and the actual people that are impacted need to be involved. So we have to, I think, the quality forum in the interest of the consumer needs to have the right people at the table deciding some of this and the use and methodology, or maybe not deciding, but certainly understanding that. So thank you for the leadership in that area, too.
Thank you.
And we'll go next to Sherry Zielinski.
Hi, me again. Sorry, I'm at an airport, so sorry about the background noise. My question revolves around, like, say, for diabetes, if we intend on maybe submitting, like, 10 or 12 measures for diabetes, my question revolves around the starting point for that. As was referred to in a question earlier, we're probably going to start all of those with episode treatment groups. The question is, is it assumed that the panel understands what an episode of care is and how it's constructed? Or for each and every measure that we submit, are we going to need to explain the method of an episode grouper for each and every measure that we submit?
Excellent question, and thank you for giving us an opportunity to share what we're thinking about with the measure developers on the phone. We realize that there's some general method approaches, concepts that are applied across all measures regardless of clinical condition, especially for the measure developers that have multiple resource use measures in different condition areas. Two things we're doing to help with that so that we can educate our technical advisory panels and our steering committee in a manner that is respectful of their time, but also still provides robust enough information so they can adequately evaluate the measures individually. We are requesting that the measure developers prepare a general methods document as is appropriate for the measure developer. So, for example, Sherry, we would request that in 2 to 5 pages that the episode treatment group is general approach as it applies across all measures is described in such a way that it gives critical information to the TAPs and to the steering committees that they need to then look at diabetes, asthma, et cetera. So exactly, we're not repeating the same thing over and over again as they look at each measure individually. We're also, and this has been done in other projects, going to provide measure developers an opportunity to present to our steering committee and our TAPs in an informational webinar. Each measure developer, for example, would be given 10 minutes and maybe 5 minutes for questions. They put together some slides on things that they want to make sure the experts understand before and as they evaluate the measure so that they can really dive into the clinical logic component and et cetera and understand what they're looking at more readily. Does that answer your question?
It does. Thanks very much, Sally.
And there are no other questions at this time. Actually, we do just had another question from Barbara Rudolph.
Hi, it's actually just a comment. Thank you very much for making that change on multiple submissions, just having gone through it with the six survival predictors where I had to repeat everything. It was very painful, so thanks a lot.
You're welcome. We're also preparing here for quite a lot of information from the developers, so any efficiencies that we can make, and we hope to learn in this first cycle one, which was another reason to stagger them so we can try and make adjustments. So, you know, please measure developers as you're going through it. If you see an opportunity for us to improve the process, go ahead and email any of us or the efficiency at qualityforum.org, and we'll see what we can do. We're really open. We want this to go as smoothly as possible. We really want to make sure that the experts are able to evaluate the measures for what they are and don't get, you know, confused in other aspects that aren't necessarily what they want to evaluate.
And there are no other questions.
Okay. Well, thank you to everyone who called in. I hope you found this presentation to be informative. We will also be posting this, as Sarah said, and emailing it out, and we're going to be very shortly be sending out and posting instructions on the submission form and some additional documents that will be helpful. And again, feel free to email us at any time. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone. That does conclude today's conference. We thank you for your participation.